morning, everyone, and welcome, as always, to our Sunday morning shiur. Today's shiur is sponsored on the occasion of the upcoming yard site of Yerachmiel Yosef ben Gershom by Rabbi Moshe Berger and his wife. Yerachmiel Yosef ben Gershom, the yard site, is this coming week on Pesach Sheni. Today's shiur is dedicated to discuss a topic which is going to become very relevant very soon, and that is the mitzvah of Shemitah, which we find discussed in the beginning of yesterday's parasha, Parashas Behar. As we know, the mitzvah of Shemitah is that every seventh year, the farmer in Eretz Yisrael has to leave his land unworked. That the work, the land gets a sabbatical. We have here on the sheet on page one, the Torah says, in the second pasuk, Dabro b'nei Yisrael, v'amartu em kisavoa ha'aretz, Asher ani nosim lachem, that when you will come into Eretz Yisrael, from these words we derive that the mitzvah of Shemitah only applies in Eretz Yisrael, doesn't apply anywhere else in the world. Kisavo ha'aretz, asher ani nosim lachem, v'shavso ha'aretz, Shabbos l'Hashem. And the land should rest, it should be Shabbos for the land. Except that this Shabbos is not just one day out of every seven, but rather it's an entire year. Okay, the Torah continues and says that for 6 years you can plant your field and so forth, work the field. It should be a year of rest for the land, Shabbos Lashem, and so forth. So this is the mitzvah of Shemitah, a mitzvah which is mind-boggling, probably one of the most difficult mitzvahs in the Torah to keep, because of the fact that, as anyone knows, everyone has their parnasa that they're involved in, and to tell someone that for a year you basically have to let your business sit and not work in it and just let things happen on their own is something that people by nature have a very big problem with. Right? Very difficult to stand by and allow that to happen. But nevertheless, this is the mitzvah of the Torah, the mitzvah of Shemitah, and it's a mitzvah which the Mefarshim tell us is centered on the concept of bitachon and trust in Hashem, that ultimately the parnasa that comes to a person comes min hashamayim, that it comes, Hashem could take care of a person in any situation, and whatever work that we do is work that we need to do for various reasons, but ultimately it's Hashem who takes care. And in order to reinforce this concept in people's minds, so we have the mitzvah of Shemitah, an amazing mitzvah, which applies every seventh year. When exactly, starting from when? So we have a Mesorah, a calculation of when the Shemitah year is, and according to the Mesorah that we have, it's going to be coming up in the year, the Hebrew year 5775, which begins on Rosh Hashanah, this coming Rosh Hashanah. Okay, the previous one was in the calendar year 2008, 5768, so every 7 years, you have the mitzvah of Shemitah. Now, what is obviously the mitzvah of Shemitah is very, very relevant to people living in Eretz Yisrael, but it also has relevance to us here in America. I'd like to go through some of the ideas. It's not really possible to cover the full scope of the mitzvah of Shemitah in one shiur, because there are many, many halachas, and they're not so well known, because nowadays obviously it's only once every 7 years, and aside from that, it affects primarily the agricultural community, which today is much smaller than it was in the times of the Torah, or even in later generations. So therefore, the halachas aren't so well known, and they're intricate. But nevertheless, the basic concepts we need to be familiar with. Okay, so if you look here in the pasuk, the pasuk says, in pasuk Dalet, it says, what can't you do? Sodcho lo sizra, you cannot plant your field and you cannot prune your vineyard. Okay? And then the Torah continues and says that the growth of the items that grow, we'll see more what this refers to, you cannot cut, meaning you cannot detach a growing plant. Okay, that's in vain as irechel al sifzar, nor can you sever the grapes from the vine. Shnasha basam yelarz. So basically, the malachos that are midoraisa, the prohibitions min haTorah of the Shemitah, are derived from these two psukim, Plus, there's another pasuk elsewhere in Sefer Shemos, which says, "V'charish u'bakotzer tishvos." So basically, there are five types of activity that are prohibited min haTorah. They are planting, which means literally planting seeds in the ground. Okay? During the year of Shemitah, a person cannot plant seeds. If a child comes home from school with a project, right, so they'll plant something in the ground, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. If a person is eating a fruit in Eretz Yisrael, and you have the leftover seeds, and you can throw them onto the ground, you can't do that either, because that would violate the law of planting in the year of Shemitah. Then we have the Zmira, pruning the trees, which means pruning a tree means cutting off all the undesired twigs, the undesired roots, undesired branches, and so forth. That cannot be done. Then we have ktsira, which is detaching a growing plant. Ktsira means severing the grapes from the vine. And charisha, plowing, which means doing something to improve the soil. All of these activities are prohibited min haTorah. And then we have other activities which are prohibited in the Rabbanan. So all told, the bottom line is a farmer cannot work his field at all in the Shemitah year. Okay, now this obviously presents a very great challenge to people living in Eretz Yisrael, and even to us, because there is produce that comes from Eretz Yisrael that's shipped to America, and especially we have every year the issue with esrogim. Right? When it comes to sukkahs, most of the esrogim that are used worldwide are grown in Eretz Yisrael. Not all of them, but most of them, overwhelming majority. And now you have a question with Shemitah esrogim. So we'll deal with this soon.
It's not just the fruits and vegetables, it's anything made from it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Anything that is made from any of these items, that's correct. Anything that's made from any of these items, you have an issue with. Okay? Now, what type of produce are we speaking about? So basically there are three types that the Torah deals with. Okay? The first type would be vegetables that grow. The second type would be grains. And the third type would be fruits. Okay? Those are the three types of food items that grow, and we'll see that the halacha varies depending on those things. Now, the question that presents itself that everyone has to first come to terms with is, but what about things that grow on their own? What about, in other words, even if you won't plant your field in the Shemitah year, but you planted the year before, and things are going to grow in Shemitah. So there's a farmer this year in Eretz Yisrael who's planting, so things that he plants are going to end up growing during the Shemitah year. What is the halacha with these fruits? Or with these vegetables? So strictly speaking, min haTorah, right? So it says in the pasuk here, in pasuk above, it says, "Vayisa Shabbos Arz Lachem Lachla, V'chol Avdecha L'amasecha, L'schircha V'l'sal Shavcha Hagarmim." The Torah addresses this, and the Torah says that whatever grows, so it can be eaten. If you didn't plant it during the Shemitah year, so whatever grows can be eaten. However, we will see that there are several restrictions here, and even the things that can be eaten can only be eaten if they are observed with the laws of Kedusha Shvias, because the Chachamim derived is based on Psukim, that fruit that grows in Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year has a status of holiness, has a status of Kedusha. Now we know that according to the Torah, there are certain items that have food items that have a status of Kedusha, most of which do not apply anymore. Like for example, the times of the Beis HaMikdash, so a person would bring a carbon, so certain carbonos, part of the meat was eaten by the donor, like most commonly it's a carbon shlamim, where the person who brought the carbon would get a part of the meat to eat, but he couldn't do whatever he wanted with it. That meat was restricted. It could only be eaten in certain places. It could only be eaten in the status of Tara, and so forth. Similarly, Kohanim had the mitzvah in the Torah to give Truma, to give it the first tithe of roughly 2% of a person's produce to a Kohen as Truma Gedola. That Truma can only be eaten b'kedusha. Kohen cannot be tamei and eat that truma. And there are restrictions to how it could be eaten. You can't just throw it out. You can't just take, you know, a bite out of an apple and just, or let's say out of a cookie and say, I don't like this, and throw the rest of it in the garbage. Yeah, yes.
Didn't we say one of the things in the Torah said you can't cut the grapes or the fruit from the plant?
Yes, yes. So how could you? Oh, very good question. So the question is that you'll say there's a contradiction here from one pasuk to the next, because in one pasuk it says that you can't cut anything off the tree, and the other pasuk says you can take the produce and eat it. So the answer to that is, this is what really we're referring to now, the answer to that is that it could be eaten, but it has to be treated with kedusha, meaning that even the way you pull it off the tree can't be the normal way. That is to say that if a person ordinarily has a tool which they use, let's say a scissors, that they cut off the fruit from the tree, okay, during the Shemitah year you can't use that. You have to do it in a different way. You have to get a different type of tool. Everything has to be done differently. So so while it is true that you are allowed to eat the produce, when the Torah says you can't pick it off, the way the Chachamim interpreted this pasuk in order that it shouldn't contradict the following pasuk was to say that it means you can't pick it in the way it's normally picked. It cannot be taken off in the normal way, but rather you would have to take it either by hand or with a different type of tool. And also there are restrictions on how much can be taken at any one time. In other words, typically a farmer, when he's harvesting his produce, so let's say he has trees, he'll pick off all the trees in one week or whatever it is. He'll go to all his trees and pick off hundreds and hundreds of fruit. You go here in central Florida, they grow the oranges, right? And you see these vast orange groves with hundreds of thousands of oranges. So the way they would be picked would be that there were certain, I imagine there are certain times that they go in and they pick many of them. They don't all ripen at the same time, but they are picked in bulk. Whereas when it comes to the Shemitah year, you're not allowed to do that. There is a question how much can be picked at any one time. This is a question not halacha. But the bottom line is that it can be picked, but only in a very delicate manner, meaning that you can't use the normal tactics, the normal tools that you use to pick them, and they can only be picked on a limited basis. And on top of that, the farmer has no precedence, has no priority in his own field. Because we have the halacha that fruit that's grown during Shemitah, the fruit that the Torah allows you to eat, is considered hefker. It is considered ownerless. And therefore, even if it grows in my field, I am not allowed to lock up my field. I can't have the fence around my field closed. I have to leave it open. And not only do I have to leave it open, but anyone is welcome to come and take it. Even a person who I don't particularly like can come into my field. Imagine that. You stand by, a guy grows a srogan, right, the whole year. Every year he has his prize, a srogan, and the Shemitah year he has to stand by and watch people walk in one after the next. And he says, oh my gosh, I get $150 for that esrog in a regular year. Well, guess what, buddy? Now you're not getting a penny for it. And not only that, but if he got there before you did, you can't even pull rank on him and say, but this is my field. It doesn't matter that it's your field. In the year of Shemitah, it's everybody's. So therefore, this is an amazing halacha. The Chazal and the Medrash consider this to be one of the most difficult mitzvahs to keep, but yet this is a mitzvah that the Klal Yisrael was held accountable for.
Yeah.
But we'll see. There's something else that they could do that would avoid that. We'll get. There's a way. You know, give Jews a chance. They'll come up with ways to get around. But the basic idea is that you have your field during the year of Shemitah. It's all hefker. There is a question whether you have to declare it hefker, whether it happens by itself. But most hold it happens by itself. But the idea is that it's for anyone to come and take. This is the mitzvah of Shemitah, but whoever is going to take it has to do it in the method of Kedusha. It has to be done, starting from the picking process, it has to be taken in a delicate manner, either by hand or with not the commercial type of utensil, that the tool that's used to harvest all the other years, but rather a special way of doing it. Okay, so now we have here. So this is the halacha of harvesting the fruit during the Shemitah. Now, we'll get back to this soon, but there's one very important halacha that needs to be discussed at this point, and that is what we find here on the bottom of page 1, which is a quote from the Rambam. Okay, the final section on page 1. So the Rambam begins and says that kol shetolti ha'aretz b'shana shviyas, that anything that grows in the seventh year, bein min hazera shanafo v'mikodem shviyas, whether it grew from seeds that had come from before the Shemitah year began, bein min ha'ikrim shenikzeru mikodem v'chazru v'asu, or whether it's from roots or trees that had been, you know, harvested previously, and the trees on their own continue to produce fruit. So all of these things are called sviach. This is what the Torah means. We had earlier in the pasuk sviach ketzir chalos sikzer. So the word sviach means things which grow on their own. Not that you planted them in violation of the law of shviyas, but they grew on their own. Now the Torah says, the Rambam says, this applies bein menasav and bayirokos, whether it's from the grains or the vegetables, shalom aleihem. Right, whether it's fruits or vegetables, makes no difference. Hakol mutar la'achol min haTorah, all these items are permissible to be eaten. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, v'ha'isa Shabbos ha'aretz lachem la'achla. Okay, lachem la'achla means it's for you to eat. So therefore, there is no ban on the fruits of Shviyas that you can't eat them. Right, the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says you can't work the field. But what about the things that grow? Not because you worked during Shemitah, but they grew from the previous year's work, or they grew on their own because of the fact that the tree continues to produce fruit. Midaraisa, all of that could be eaten. Okay, now, however, he asked the question that we had before, the pasuk says, well, sikzar. So the Rambam says that it means that it can't be done in the normal way that it's done all the other years, but nonetheless, you're allowed to eat it. Now, if you go down to Halacha Beis, the Rambam tells us a very important thing, which is found in the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim on Daf Nun Aleph, and that is Midivrei Sofrim Sheyiyu Koas Afichim Asurim Bachilu. The rabbis came along and said that we have to make a distinction, that with some things that grow we're going to allow, and some things that grow we are going to ban, even if they grew legally. Okay, and what was that? So the distinction they made was that fruits on the tree are permissible. As the Torah says, that remains. However, the vegetables and the grains that grow, the Rabbanan said, even if it grew legally, you cannot eat it during Shemitah. It's a gzeira the Rabbanan made. Why? So the Rambam says, V'loma gazer aleihem. Why did they make a gzeira? V'pnei ovrei aveira. Because of the fact that since the Shemitah, the mitzvah of Shemitah is very difficult, very, very difficult to fulfill, so there were people who tried to beat the system. And what? How would they do that? So they would go ahead, because vegetables and legumes, things like that, right, here you have the word kidneys, right, it's not Pesach, but here you have that word, right, that these types of items, right, which grow quickly and require effort from year to year to grow. They won't just necessarily grow on their own. So it's very easy for a person to go ahead when nobody's looking and plant his tomatoes in his backyard. And when people pass by and say, what's going on here? It's Shemitah and you have tomatoes growing. So he'll say, well, it has nothing to do with me. These are the tomatoes that grew by themselves. I didn't do that. So, because the mitzvah of Shemitah was always a very difficult mitzvah to keep, so over the passage of time, this obviously began to happen. So, because of the fact that when it came to these types of items, it was very easy and very tempting to do, and a person could easily get away with it, because it won't look bad. People see it, right? So you'll just say, well, you know, that so it is. Okay? So therefore, the Rabbanan banned all of these things. And okay, now this ban that the Rabbanan made was not made on fruit. Why not? Because of the fact that fruit is the type of thing you can't just plant a fruit tree quickly. Right? It won't grow. It takes years for a fruit tree to grow. So therefore, there wasn't really much to worry about. When it comes to these other items, so you could plant them quickly. So if you look here in the Rambam and Halacha Gimel, the Rambam says, Olamadika Shein Olchum Yuteres Shviyas Ela Peros Hayuanos. Right? The only thing that you would be allowed to eat based on this zera would be the fruits of the trees. Vasavim Shein Zarnosim Rova Adam, and very uncommon types of legumes. But the typical vegetables and grains and things like that, even if they grew legally during Shemitah, have the rabbinic ban of what's called today in common vernacular, svichim. These are called svichim, and these are things which a person cannot eat. So therefore, if you would hear someone say that stuff grew in the Shemitah year without it being planted, and you're not allowed to eat it, you'll say, well, it's crazy, it's against the Torah. The answer is, it's true, it is. The Torah says you are allowed to eat them. However, the Rabbanan, because of the fact that it was rubble over Aveira, because of the fact that over the years, as we say, this mitzvah, gut-wrenching mitzvah for a farmer to sit and watch his field, that's his pride and joy that he puts all his efforts into year in and year out, day in and day out, to allow his field to just lie fallow for a year is very, very difficult, and the temptation is enormous, and it's possible to get away with it. You could come any time and get up before people are out in the streets and do these types of activities. So therefore, the Rabbanan banned it. Okay? So as such, in practical halacha, the only thing that really we could eat that grew during Shemitah would be fruits. Okay? Which obviously, as srogim, are fruits, but so for us in America, the primary consideration would be that. However, there are also other items, vegetables that are marketed and so forth, and you have to know. Even if you got it from somebody who said, "Well, I'm telling you, it grew by itself," you couldn't eat it anyway. Okay, so this is the issur that we have of svichim. Right, okay. So even though you'll say, so what does an esrog have to do with these halachas? We don't generally eat esrogim. So the answer is, because if you look in the Gemara in Sefer Sotah, the Gemara says that an esrog, in order for it to be kosher, has to be sheyesh ba heter achila. The Gemara derives from a pasuk that in order for an esrog to be usable for the mitzvah, it has to be the type of esrog that can be eaten. So, for example, it's discussed there in the Gemara at great length. If you have an esrog shel truma and you're not a kohen, or so forth, can you go borrow a kohen's esrog if it was a truma esrog? And the answer is you can't, because it has to be, if I remember correctly, it has to be a heter achila. It has to be something that you could eat. So, if it's a banned esrog, even if you have no intention of eating it, you can't use it. You could shake it if you want, but you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah. So therefore, that is where the issue of the srogim comes up. Okay, now, so thus we have, in the practical reality, the only real heter that we have for the shmita, the items that grow naturally, would be from fruit, but vegetables and grains would be prohibited. Okay, so now, when does the shmita year begin? When does a person have to be concerned about these things? Obviously, if you come, so we know that the Jewish year begins on Rosh Hashanah, and that is halacha, that Rosh Hashanah is the starting point of the Shemitah year. And thus, if you walked into a store in Eretz Yisrael during the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and saw fruit, even though technically the laws of Shemitah are in effect, but you'll say, but these fruits are from before, right? In other words, if they're here in the store today, that means they were picked probably a couple of days ago and shipped over. So if you went on the day after Rosh Hashanah to the store, you say, well, there is no problem, which is in fact the truth. Okay? So what is the cutoff for something to be determined when it grew? After all, many times, Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the Jewish year, but it's not the beginning of the agricultural cycle. So therefore, the question presents itself, what if a fruit grew partially before Shemitah and partially on Shemitah? So what is that considered? So the basic cutoff is as follows. When it comes to fruit, so if it had chanota means, the way it's interpreted in the halachic context, is that if it was one-third grown before the Shemitah year began, then it's considered from the year before. Then it's considered from the year before, and then it's not a problem to eat that during Shemitah, that would be considered from the sixth year. And thus, many of the fruits that are available have that reality, even if they weren't picked until Shemitah, but because of the fact that they blossomed and they began to develop before the Shemitah year, they don't have the restrictions of Shemitah. So as such, yes, sir.
Do they have to be picked differently?
So they have to be picked differently is a good question. So many people hold they do have to be picked differently, even in such a case. However, that's a shaila. You know, that's a question as far as, you know, whether that the kedusha shvia applies in such items. But when it comes to the question of can you eat it or not, so it's not an issue. That's not an issue. Therefore, a person living in Eretz Yisrael has to be advised, and they have available calendars that they'll tell you for every single fruit at what point in the year do you have to worry about it. In other words, do you have to, you know, much in the same way we don't really have this here in Miami, but in New York, after Pesach, there's always a difficulty going into food stores to buy chametz food because of the fact that the majority of the food distributors in the New York, New Jersey area are Jewish. Most of them are not religious, but they are Jewish. It's a Jewish-held industry. And the problem is that the chametz that was in the possession of a Jew on Pesach, you're not allowed to eat. Not only is he not allowed to eat it, but no Jew is allowed to eat it. So therefore, here in Miami, Baruch Hashem, we don't know from this. Nobody has any problems. You go to Publix right after Pesach, you can buy whatever you want. But in New York, you know, in many, many shuls, on the last day of Pesach, the rabbi gets up with a list and says, okay, the following stores you can buy from, and the following stores you can't, because of the fact that this food distribution is in Jewish hands. So you have to keep a cheshbon. Now, how far does that go? For how long does that go? So there are different customs. I mean, obviously, it would go by, you know, the turnover in the stores, how quickly they move their merchandise and so forth, but the generally accepted custom that most people have would be till Pesach Sheni, which we have coming up in a few days. So therefore, once you hit Pesach Sheni, it is presumed that's not because it's derived from a pasuk or some Kabbalistic reason, but just from a practical reality, it's presumed that by that point they turned over all the merchandise and whatever they had in their possession by Pesach would already be cleaned out and be off the shelves by Pesach Sheni. So in the same way that is held today by us in certain parts of America, so in Eretz Yisrael, a person has to be aware of when the fruits are banned. And a person who wants to observe the laws of Shemitah properly has to know this. He has to know, okay, from this day, this is the cutoff. This is the cutoff day. Right? You have also here by us people who are meticulous in the observance of Chodesh, right? The people who are, you know, eat only the Yashan. I mean, obviously, we all only eat Yashan. The question is, the Torah doesn't allow you to eat Chodesh, so there's a point being that, you know, what does it take to assume that something is Yashan? We once years ago discussed this, right? So most people rely on the fact that it's unknown and it's hard to find out, and therefore you have what's called a sex faker. There are so many doubts as to whether the produce is new or old that you can just assume it's old and eat it. However, nowadays there are more and more people that say that that's not true because you could track it and you could find this out and the information is readily available, and therefore they're meticulous to eat only what's confirmed to be Yashan. So now, this time of the year, it's no problem because once Pesach hits, all the new stuff is permitted. But as you go further into the year, so then it becomes an issue. So people who are careful about this have their calendars. They have guides that say, okay, spaghetti, you have to watch from this point, and whatever, cakes, you have to watch from this point, and flour, and so forth. So in Eretz Yisrael, a person would have to be kept on top of the dates for all of these various items, but it applies only to fruit because the vegetables you can't eat anyway because of the ban the Rabbanan made. Yes?
That was the question. Yeah. One-third rule would not apply to vegetables.
So no, the truth is the one-third rule does apply to vegetables also. In other words, if it grew the year before, then it's not sufficient. No, so I actually have to correct myself. In other words, you would need a calendar for that also, except that vegetables turn over much faster. In other words, fruit on the tree, pretty much, you know, once it starts to come out, you leave it there for a long while till it ripens, whereas vegetables typically ripen quicker, and therefore it gets out faster. But yeah, there is such a thing with vegetables also. So when it sprouted, when the chanotah, in other words, when this item sprouted determines the law of Shemitah. If it sprouted the year before Shemitah, then it is edible. If it sprouted during Shemitah, then you have the issue. Okay, so now the question is, so what is done about this? In other words, you go to Eretz Yisrael. I was speaking yesterday to someone who lived in Eretz Yisrael for many years. And they said that, you know, the truth of the matter is, it doesn't seem, in a lot of the places, it doesn't seem to be such an issue. It's not like, you know, is your life very different during the year of Shemitah? Is there a tremendous concern, the pressing concern? So the answer is that in real life, we don't find that for the average consumer, it makes that much of a difference. Now, why is that? Why is that? So the answer to that is going to be dependent on what it takes, what options there are for a person during the Shemitah year to get through. Okay? So, as far as the general population in Eretz Yisrael, so there is a system that has been in place in Eretz Yisrael for over 100 years. We discussed this years ago, that in the year 1887, which was the Shemitah year, when the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael was in its infancy stages, and the economy was very, very weak. The land of Israel has a special segula that it only produces when Jews live there, which is found in Rashi in this coming week's parashah, in Parashas B'chukosai, that Rashi says, based on a pasuk in the Tochacha, that there is a special promise that Hashem made to the Jewish people that when they're exiled from the land, it won't produce very much. And in fact, it's one of the great nisim that we see right in front of our eyes. Right, the look in this coming week's parasha, look in the Rashi, is an incredible miracle that we see right in front of our eyes. That for the 1900 years or 1800 years that Jews didn't live in Eretz Yisrael, nobody inhabited it. Nobody inhabited it. If you think about it, the fact that we have back today Eretz Yisrael is a miracle, but one of the biggest miracles, which doesn't necessarily get considered, is the fact that no one else inhabited it. If the Indians came back today and said, we want America back, then nobody would listen to them, right? You'd give them some, you know, if you make some compromises with them, you'll give them your casinos in a couple of places and say, you know, it's like a bench, you know, have a good life and don't bother me. What's done is done. And that's only based on something that happened a few hundred years ago. Okay, the Jewish people with very, you know, throughout the Golos, from the time the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed until the late 1700s, and even then there was only a handful of people, right, there were very few Jews living there at Yisrael. So easily could have been taken over by somebody else, and had that happened over 1800 years, it would have been impossible to go back. You couldn't go back and reclaim the land. How could you do that? So the answer is, because one of the absolutely astonishing nisim that we see is the fact that nobody wanted it. And the reason why nobody wanted it was because nothing grew. You couldn't do anything with it. The land was terrible, it was not fertile, nothing would grow. And therefore it was basically left to nomads. It was not, you know, for all the other Arab countries were heavily populated, all the Middle Eastern countries are heavily populated, but Eretz Yisrael was not. And therefore it was still with great difficulty, but it was shayach, it was possible to go back and reclaim it. It's an astonishing nace, which is mentioned by Rashi in this coming week's parsha. So when this phenomenon, right, that it would not produce so long as Jews didn't live there, right, for 1800 years nothing grew. The Jews came back in large numbers, and all of a sudden they were exporting fruit all over the world. Right, you have the Jaffa Island. You have today. Today they've moved on to technology has become the number one export. But for many years, produce was a tremendous export in Eretz Yisrael, right? Which is mind boggling because you couldn't get anything to grow there all the year. And all of a sudden, once the Klal Yisrael came back, they're shipping it all over the world. It's growing in great numbers. So, but in the early days of the Yishuv, in the late 1800s, this was still not the case, because, you know, it was still in its old status. And therefore, the concern was that if the law of Shemitah in 1887 would be kept, that would wipe out the Yishuv of Jews who went back to live in Eretz Yisrael, because they were relying heavily on agriculture. So there was a great debate. The Shaila was sent to the Rabbanim in Europe, the greatest Rabbanim that had Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, but the greatest Gedolim in that world were the Poskim in Europe. And the Gadol Hador, the man who was considered to be the leading posek at that time, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, came up with a heter that is known to this day as the heter Mechira. That he said that in order to avoid this problem of Shemitah, you could take the land and sell it to a guy. Take the various farms, sit down with the Arabs, and work out some sort of contract and say that for this year, or it was actually done for more than 1 year due to certain technicalities, for this year we are selling you much in the same way that we sell our chametz before Pesach. So they sold the land to the Arabs. Now, this was at the time that this was devised, it was hotly contested. There were rabbis in Europe that were very opposed to this. The most notably, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and Tziv of Volozhin was very adamantly against this for various halachic reasons. He felt that, first of all, as we'll soon see, it's questionable whether a guy's ownership removes all the laws of Shemitah, but even if you could, there are questions whether you're allowed to sell the land of Israel to a non-Jew, whether that's permissible in the first place. He claimed that that was a bigger avera than to violate Shemitah, and therefore it would be better they should violate Shemitah outright than to sell it to the Arabs. So it was a very, very controversial thing, but nevertheless, because Rav Yitzchak Elchanan was the most respected rabbi, so this went into effect. Yes.
What about ownerless land?
Ownerless land. So ownerless land is a question, what the status of that is. In other words, you're saying if
nobody
we don't know.
The land itself.
Yeah, so if it grows by itself, in ownerless land, it should be permissible. But to just make it hefter was not considered, I guess for various reasons, they weren't comfortable doing that, you know, so because then, you know, somebody goes like this, it's sold, all right, we sold it for a year, but it's still, we have, you know, a certain degree of control over it. So this was the Hatta Mechira that was done. Now, the person, and Rav Yitzchak Elchanan was not the only one, but he was the leading advocate of this system. He writes very clearly in his tshuva that he did this because of he felt it was a question of pikuach nefesh, that it would be, you know, the people would be in danger when of anything to eat. Okay, now whether that's still, now it happens to be that he gave the heter for the year 1887, I believe it was also, he agreed in 1894, I'm not sure it was still alive, but whatever, the rabbis agreed 7 years later they should also do it. Okay, now Rav Kook went ahead and continued it further, and even though Rav Kook himself passed away in 1935, which was even before the establishment of the Knesset Yisrael, but nevertheless, he felt he was the leading rabbi, the leading posek in Eretz Yisrael in his time, and he felt that, you know, all things considered, this should be allowed to continue. Now, whether it should still be allowed to continue today, in the year 2014, which is way, you know, is already 130 years, 120 years after Rav Yitzchak Elchanan's original heter, is a subject of great debate. It's a subject of great debate, and there are a lot of issues because of the fact that even Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, even Rav Kook, did not allow it outright. In other words, he was very well versed in halacha, and therefore he basically said it should only be for prohibitions that are rabbinic, and not for things which is arise. All kinds of conditions that he made that were not necessarily followed, was challenging. So to just say we have the Hetter Mechira, people have to know all the ins and outs. So in defense of this, the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael has made great efforts over the years to be on top of it. And this is a serious thing. It's not like, you know, it's just the same as selling the chametz before Pesach, right? It's the same issue because of the fact that you have to make sure this is done right. You're playing with a Torah violation here. You're dealing with an Issa Daraisa, right? Having chametz on Pesach is not a chi of karis, as we've mentioned, right? The chi of karis for having chametz is only if you eat chametz. Right, if you have chametz in your possession, if ba'yira ba'yimotze is allowed in the Torah, it's a mitzvah lo sase, but for that we go to great lengths to do whatever we can, that we have to get rid of the chametz. So too, not to have Jews working fields, or even non-Jews working on Jewish fields. I mean, it doesn't help if you're a Jew owning a field in Eretz Yisrael to say, well, I'll let the Arabs work there. That doesn't help. If it's your field can't be worked, regardless of who's working it. So therefore, this was an issue that it has to be done with great delicacy and very, it's very intricate, has to be with very delicate type of thing. And a lot of the irreligious kibbutzim in Eretz Yisrael aren't interested in participating in this. Yeah, I don't know if I'm like appeal to the Arabs. What are you talking about? This is my field. The Torah says Shvita, so unfortunately they don't care. So therefore, it's not such a simple thing to carry forth in practice. Nevertheless, they do go to great lengths to try to work it out. But because it is questionable whether the heter would have been given today, in other words, the original heter was given by the Gadol HaDor, but that was in a different scenario. Whether that would still apply today, you know, some people say, well, for sure it would apply today because this became such a big part of the economy. On the other hand, people say, but there's enough other things out there that, we could manage this way. In other words, it was always a big part of the economy. The Torah's time was also a big part of the economy. Nevertheless, you have that mitzvah. So it's very controversial, let's put it that way. And we once spoke about this at length, what all the issues are, various questions in halacha with selling land to non-Jews. So the practicality is that you have those who do and those that don't. Okay, a general rule, the Rabbanut in most cities, perhaps all over Eretz Yisrael, as a policy, still stands behind this, the Heter Mechira. But a lot of people are not so quick to embrace it. In other words, this is because of the controversy involved. There are many people are not so excited to go after that material.
So you plan to address hydroponics?
Yes, we'll get to that.
Just as a point of clarification, especially you'll see it coming up next year on wine.
Yeah.
2 years on wine.
Yeah.
The same bottles of wine that will have an OU or an OK on it in particular, absolutely none of the major kosher agencies, nor do the ordinary Miami pulled by the FDA.
Right, okay, right. So that's thank you to point that. Right, so as a practical matter, the none of the major American kosher agencies rely on the Heter Mechira, let's put it that way. They don't rely on it, meaning that they will not, the OU, OK, Stark, FFK, all these places, ORB, Kosher Miami will not accept that, okay, because of the controversy involved. So therefore, we have to at least see what other options are involved. Yeah, yes.
In the case of the government requiring the rabbit to follow.
Yeah, it's, I don't know exactly. The rabbit is probably interested in doing it just because it's better than nothing, and you'll save a lot of people. In other words, a lot of people in Eretz Yisrael, same thing with chametz on Pesach. In other words, there are stores that are owned by Jews that sell chametz on Pesach that do mechiras chametz, which is amazing, right? In other words, the rabbi, they got a rabbi to sell the chametz, and then they continue to sell the chametz on Pesach, right? So some people say that negates the whole thing, but I believe Moshe Feinstein said that they should still do it because it's better to have that, because even though it comes out that they're not allowed to sell the items because they're violating the Mechira, but you know, you save them from the Yisuchamitz, okay, I don't know. So I think the Rabbanut does it as a matter of course. I don't think it's necessary because they're under pressure from the government. They do it because it's in the best interest of the Kaiser. They're trying to protect most people. So most people, it's beneficial. At least they have that. Now, if you hold that the Heter Mechira today is not reliable at all, not something you can rely on, to them, they're not accomplishing anything. But their feeling is that, listen, there's still reason to say it, and it was formulated like a dolem, and okay, it's better than nothing. It probably is much better than nothing. So therefore, whether, you know, they continue to do it, whether it's relied upon, that's a different question. That's up to every person makes their own decision as far as that goes, but the leading kosher organizations don't accept it. Okay, that's as far as that goes. Now, what other options are there? Okay, so number one, there is a system that is in practice in Eretz Yisrael, which is based on a Tosefta that we find in Sefer Shvias, and that is the system called Otzer Beistin. Otzer Beistin means the following. It means the way that works is that the owner of a field declares his field to be hefker, and a beistin takes over the control of those fields. They take over the farmlands, and they harvest the fruit under their auspices. The fruits are harvested. They're harvested in ways that are acceptable during Shvias, meaning it can't be done in the regular way, and it can't be done in large, in bulk, and so forth. But they accept this responsibility, and they distribute it to the public, and they do charge. They do charge for this. However, the charge for this is only for labor. It's not for the fruit itself. And therefore, the fruits that are sold under the Otzah Basin system are much cheaper. So I remember, for example, I myself was in Eretz Yisrael in the summer of 2008, which was the Shemitah year. And, I remember that there was an announcement, we have Otzah Basin fruit came to this and this place, and they had these delicious plums, and they were very, very cheap. They were very, very cheap, and the reason for that is because you're not paying. The only thing under this system you're allowed to do is pay for the labor. So therefore, this is a way that farmers can still, in some way, they in other words, it's signed over to a basin, so, they have to hire people to do the work. So people go in and harvest the fruits, but you could pay for this, in the way that you're paying not for the item itself, but for the labor that's involved. Now, if that system is used, now this is what everybody is going to rely on in Sukkot 2015, right? This coming Sukkot, when we have that Srogan, it's not going to be an issue because all those Srogan were here before Rosh Hashanah, so they're not Shemitah Srogan, nothing to talk about. But when you have the following year, all the Srogan are Shemitah Srogan, right? So what are you going to do about that? Had that get here, and how are you allowed to pay for that? So the answer is, it got here. It will say on the boxes that it was Otzah Basin, right? The boxes are stamped Otzah Basin, that this was done under this system, and therefore, really, this rogan should be very cheap. For selling them, yeah. right? So you say, well, how come they're not very cheap? So in America, the way they beat the system is they say, oh, that's true, this is free. But the lulav is here. So you're paying for the lulav and the hadassim. You think these are simple hadassim, right? These are very expensive hadassim. But if you go in Eretz Yisrael, where the items are very often sold separately, right? You go in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have this, you buy the whole set in one place, but rather you go here for a srogim and here for a lulav. So then an esrog should be dirt cheap in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it is. In other words, if you go there, they can't. What are they going to say? You can't. You usually get, let's say, $50-$60 for this esrog. You can't charge that this year, right? You have to charge just the nominal fee that would defray the cost of the labor in picking it. So you'll see. Just wait, okay? When it comes a year from Sukkot, okay, get ready to hear this, right? You're going to wherever you buy your Arbaminim, you're going to be given the speech, right? The speech is, you're not paying for the esrog. Right, you're not paying for the esrog. God forbid, because you're paying for the esrog, you're violating the law of Shemitah. So therefore, this year, all the money is for the other things, not for the...
It's a public service, right?
It's a public...
They're not making any profit.
Absolutely. The Otzah Basin system is done as a public service, enough for sure, because of the fact that people need fruit, so what are you going to do? In other words, fruit is a basic, basic necessity. So, according to the Torah, you can just go into fields and pick it, but in the modern world, very difficult. You live in cities that are nowhere near the farms where they, have these things, so what are you gonna do? So therefore, this is a very practical service that's done, is the Otzah Basin, and if you're lucky enough to, you have to know, it's not sold commonly in stores, very often it's sold privately, it's sold in, it's because of the fact that you're not supposed to really do commerce with the fruits of Shviat. So even in this system, you're not supposed to. So it's not going to be found in stores generally. It's going to either be in a special store or it's going to be in someone's house. I remember going to someone's apartment to pick up a crate of plums. You also cannot sell it by weight. The fruits of Shviat cannot be sold, even when it's permissible, cannot be sold in the normal manner. You can't weigh them and say, okay, this is how much it is per pound. They sell it by crate and they say, this crate of plums is this amount. And that's it, okay, which is fantastic if you're able to get it. It's a very cheap price. However, the catch with this is that all the fruits have the designation of Kedusha Shviat. They all have the sanctity of Shviat, which means you have to be careful when you eat it. Meaning that if you eat the plum and you don't like it, you can't throw it in the garbage. Because you can't throw Kedusha away so quickly. Much in the same way that if you have Shemitz, a ripped safe, you can't just take and throw in the garbage, an old chumash, you can't just toss it out. So this is true here too. You have to be careful, you give it to your children. Right? Very often happens, a child eats some of it and leaves over the rest. What are you going to do with that? So what do you have to do? So essentially what you have to do is hold it until it rots. And only then can you discard it. Once it's rotten, it lost its sanctity because it's considered something else. And therefore then you could throw it out. But this is something I remember when I had this experience. I mean, maybe people who have lived in Eretz Yisrael know much better than me, but I had this experience. It was a little bit nerve-wracking. I had to be on top of it. I was giving my children fruit and say, you better eat it. And if you don't eat it, give it back to me. If you decide you don't want it, give it back. Okay? Because you can't just throw it out. Not only that, but other halachas pertaining to the kedusha of produce, in the kedusha of shmita, is that you can only eat produce in the way that it's normally eaten. So therefore, if you turn over the sheet here, the Rambam says, the Rambam is the source of many of these halachas. So the Rambam says in the bottom section, he says, "Lachilo shia ketzad." He says that you could lechol davar shadakol lishtos, that it has to be treated the same way as truma, which we mentioned earlier, that you can only eat it in the way it's normally eaten. So the Rambam says, therefore, you can't make alterations. Something that's normally eaten raw cannot be cooked. Okay? If you want to have a baked apple during Shemitah, you can't do it because apples are normally eaten raw. And since they're normally eaten raw, so it's only a minority of people, even though it's widely accepted to do such a thing, but it's not the normal way to eat it. So if it's not the normal way to eat it, you can't eat it that way. You can only eat it the way it's commonly eaten. Okay, something that's normally eaten cooked, you can't eat raw. Something that's normally eaten raw, you can't eat cooked. So you have to be careful with this. This is a kedusha shviz, it's not a joke. Okay, so you have that, and the same thing is true, that it can't be wasted. And this applies not just to food, but even to beverages, even to drinks. Let's say wine. So for example, we have the age-old custom that when it comes to Havdalah, right, so we pour the cup in such a way that the wine overflows. A minhag, you don't have to do that, but it's a minhag, it's a skula that the person should have wealth in his house, that he pours the wine of Havdalah, that the wine should overflow the cup. You can't do that during the Shemitah year with Shemitah wine. Because what are you going to do with that wine? You're going to spill it out? You can't do that, you just wasted it. Not only that, but you get ready for this one, if you're sitting at the Pesach Seder, and you dip out wine for the 10 plagues, right? The 10 matzahs, dum, sardaya, right? Spill out the wine. What do you do with that wine afterwards? So some people, when no one's looking, drink it. But the fact of the matter is, but you know, you have to be careful who you're sitting with. But a lot of people, right? Most people take that wine, spill it out. But you can't do that during Shemitah because that wine, that's not a good enough justification to spill out sacred wine. So therefore, you can't do that year. So you have to, by the Pesach Seder, you have to control yourself. Oh, this year we're not doing it. This year we're not doing it. So there are a lot of strings attached. There are a lot of strings attached to these halachas. So therefore, the Ota Basin system is a great system, but you have to be on your A game. You have to be aware of what's going on all year long when you're dealing with these fruits. Yes. What? Yeah. Go ahead. You basically have to wait till it decomposes. Yeah, seeds and pits are considered in and of itself inedible, but if there's a little bit left, so you have left, also a big problem, you have the leftovers at the meal, right? In other words, you bring in the plates at the end of the meal, they didn't finish the whole portion. What are you going to do? You're going to take that stuff and throw it in the garbage? You can't do that, right? So that's an issue. That's an issue. So what do you have to do? So what people do is they put it in a separate bag, and then they discard that, they double wrap it, all kinds of things, so they don't put it in the regular garbage. There's a lot of things that are involved in this that you have to be careful. Okay, what's that? I don't know what they do with it at the end, but that's something. Okay, so that's the ultimate basic system. Okay, very quickly. What other options are available? So another option that's available is that the laws of Shemitah only apply to produce that is grown in biblical Eretz Yisrael. Okay, meaning that the Rambam says, actually, what does it mean, biblical Eretz Yisrael? So the Rambam says here on the top of the page, on page 2, Ein Shvias Noheges Elo Eretz Yisrael Bovad, as we mentioned at the outset, the law of Shemitah only applies to produce grown in Israel. Now what's considered Israel? Okay, the boundaries of the state of Israel today are what they are. Is that considered the Torah boundaries? If you look in the Chumash, you will see that when the Jews went into Eretz Yisrael after they came out of Mitzrayim, they also occupied the east bank of the Jordan River, right? So we have all the political fights are over the west bank, right? We have a claim to the east bank, because that's what's today the country of Jordan was part of Eretz Yisrael. That's where 2.5 tribes live. right? So what constitutes Eretz Yisrael? So the Rambam says that kol shev zikubo in the halacha chavav, kol shev zikubo oleg bogam. Okay, that it doesn't go by what were the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael when the Jews went in the first time. But rather, it goes, so I have to correct myself, it's not really biblical Eretz Yisrael, but rather it goes by the boundaries that went the second time, when they came back from Babel after the 70-year exile, whatever lands were occupied, that's considered Eretz Yisrael as far as Shemitah goes. That's the way it is. So now, that being the case, why that is discussed, but this is what he says, that anything other than that would not be, the laws of Shemitah would not apply. Now, that being the case, so if you look at what today is considered Eretz Yisrael, there are certain parts that might not be. So, for example, now here there are, of course, different opinions, but what you have, some people say that anything south of the city of Ashkelon is not considered Eretz Yisrael by those standards. It's not considered Eretz Yisrael by those standards. There are people that's the most lenient opinion as far as this is concerned. There are people that say you have to go further south. There's an area just slightly north of the city of Eilat, which is already considered out. And in the north of Eretz Yisrael, there is some question about the Golan, whether the Golan Heights are considered part of Eretz Yisrael. And there's a wine company, you've probably seen the Golan, which grows there, right? So therefore you have questions as to what's considered Eretz Yisrael or not. And various Hefsherim rely on different poskim for that. But this is also possibly a way to function in the Shemitah year, that if you grow stuff within areas that is part of the state of Israel, but not part of halakhic Eretz Yisrael, so then that would be okay. Okay, the next option is if it's grown by goyim. Okay, if it's grown by goyim, let's say an Arab legitimately owns the field, not that he participated in a mechira, but this is Arab land. It just is. It's been that way for years and years. So now there is a question what the status of that is. So everybody agrees that you're allowed to plant and harvest in those fields. That's for sure. The question is, do the laws of Shvius apply to them? In other words, if an Arab grows it in his land, is it completely absolved as if it grew in America, as if it grew in Chile? Or do we say that, well, you could eat it, but you still have to observe the laws of Shemitah, the Kedusha Shvius? So here, there are two customs. There's a big argument in the poskim between the Beis Yosef and Matbitz and the early Achronim, and basically the custom in Yerushalayim is that they're lenient, and they say that if it was grown in Arab lands, it's free from all considerations of Shvius, and you can do whatever you want with it, you can throw it out, no problem. However, in B'nai Brak, where they followed the ruins of the Chazon Ish felt that the halacha was like the Matbitz, and that you have to still observe the Kedusha Shvius even there. So, therefore, the result of that is that if a person would be in B'nai Brak during the Shemitah year, they have to be much more careful with produce, because if you go in a lot of the religious areas, so just to avoid all the headaches, they buy from the Arabs. Now, whether or not, you know, you agree with that for other reasons is also worth discussing, but that's beyond the scope of the share. But nevertheless, you know, they buy from the Arabs. So in Yerushalayim, you buy from the Arabs, do what you want. You live life as normal. That's why I said that people will tell you that they live in Eretz Yisrael, they don't really see a difference in Shemitah, because they're getting from the Arab lands the fruit, so it's all good, no problem. Right? However, if you go to B'nai Brak, they don't say that, because they say, good, you got it from the Arabs, so what? But it still has the Kedusha. And therefore, you have to still be careful. Right? So they have a much stricter standard that would be observed during the Shemitah. I'm sure that happened. Yeah, okay. Listen, they, unfortunately, when you're dealing with these types of things, there are all kinds of levels that, you know, people will stoop to. As you said, Shemitah is a difficult, difficult mitzvah, but nevertheless, this is a big inyan that we have to try to go by. Finally, greenhouses, hydroponics, things like that, many poskim hold is also off the books. In other words, if it's not grown attached to the ground, many poskim hold that's permissible. There, in certain cases, if it's a permanent type of structure that's been in operation for many years, there are poskim that are machmir, but a lot of people hold that the greenhouse is okay. So, therefore, at the end of the day, you know, as far as us here in America, it's not so relevant, unless you go to Eretz Yisrael. If you go to Eretz Yisrael for many years, it's totally relevant. But if you live, you know, if you live here, so the big issue is going to be with the esrogim and produce. If you know during the course of the year that in Publix they're selling Israeli fruit, or let's say they're selling Israeli vegetables, you can't touch it, right? Because that's the issur d'rabbanan shvichim. If they're selling Israeli fruit, you know, so then the exports are not from Arabs. The exports are from the Jewish lands. You have to find out. You have to find out what's the story. Who approved this? You know, the Rabbanut, from what I understand, doesn't have such control over the exports, and therefore you have to know. You have to know what you're getting when it comes to esrogim. So there, as we say, you have the Otsa Basin system, which is in place. And therefore, just make sure that you're paying for the wool and not for the esrog. Okay?